listen yet.
Yeah.
Did you end up doing a small episode with Jason, or was that one just a solo with the same?
No, it was me and Jason, and I'll try not to repeat too much stuff. But he did mention he got a text message from you, and that's what spurred him on to jump on that. Because he had been planning on watching it, but not right away.
Okay.
He had other stuff planned. Mm-hmm. And he got a text message from you and then was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, because one of my buddies who was, he's probably one of the only like people that I know that's actually read the whole, like, the graphic novel series.
Right.
And he was raving about, you know, how they did a damn good job of kind of following that and, you know, and not cutting out too much stuff or kind of butchering it. He was really impressed with what they did. And he was really hyping it up. I'm like, oh man, I definitely have to watch this now. I was texting Jason because I know he was interested in it as well.
Yeah. So we're talking about The Sandman, Neil Gaiman's The Sandman. It just got adapted to a TV series on Netflix. And yeah, that's interesting. The person who's read the books versus I might have two Sandman comics in my collection that I've looked at. Mm-hmm. So I have kind of like I'm familiar with the ideas, but I've never really dove in to any like storylines. Reading one issue is not gonna like, because the way it seems is he had like story arcs, and so I was planning to watch, it was on my list of stuff to watch. Mm-hmm. So I watched it right away, but I've only watched two episodes because I'm not binging.
Mm-hmm.
But
for me going into this, I honestly knew absolutely nothing about it, and I definitely hit the spot for kind of this unique kind of there's nearly nothing else out like it currently.
Yeah.
At least that's a newer running show.
Yeah.
You know, it has, you know, well, I know the previously they've had kind of some of the others like American Gods, and they've had a few kind of, you know, I would say, was it lore based?
Yeah, because American Gods is that way, where it's like this person is a personification of this thing or a god, or just it's almost like ideas taking form into becoming a person, which is what this is really with the Endless.
Yeah,
they frame it where he's like the king of dreams, and dreams is like a realm or something,
which is a cool I don't know if that's his take, or if that's, I mean, I don't really know much about the history of like where the Morpheus, the Sandman came from. It was this, I'm assuming this definitely was not Neil Gaiman's like original thought.
No, this is a character that had already existed in DC Comics when Neil Gaiman in the late 80s and early 90s started getting clout. DC was like, would you do a series for us? And he didn't want to paint himself into a corner with you know, you sign a contract and you're supposed to do a couple years on a book. He didn't want to like feel like it becomes a chore. Like story wise, like he deliberately made it. there was a character named Sandman prior in the DC, and it was somebody that could go into dreams and stuff like that. And he thought, wow, that's a cool idea that hasn't really been exploited yet. And he thought, well, with that concept, I mean, it's, like, possibilities are endless.
Right.
Like, a dream can be a nightmare, or a dream can be like a fantasy realm, or it can be something more mundane, or it can be a, like I said, a nightmare, like a horror story. Like, so the stories can be a bunch of different, like, they're not all going to be horror stories.
Right.
He can really play with He did mention on a podcast I listened to recently, and I brought up with Jason, so I am repeating this part from the last episode, is he wanted the TV series to each episode to be very, like, not very different, but like you are following a story, but he doesn't want one episode to feel like the next episode. Mm-hmm. He mentioned Game of Thrones, just as an example, not in a negative way, because I think him and the author of Game of Thrones are good friends in real life. So he was just using Game of Thrones as an example that you watch one episode of Game of Thrones, you're probably going to get a similar next episode where it's like, political intrigue and violence and sex and whatever. Mm-hmm. And so you do get formulaic. He didn't want that with this. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing with the books, but also with the TV show, which you've watched the entire thing.
Yeah.
Does it feel that way where it doesn't feel like one episode feels like the previous in structure, I guess, is...
I think that it ties together nicely, but no episode feels like it's a rehash of the same.
The previous episode, yeah.
I mean, it definitely kind of keeps you guessing somewhat.
Yeah.
I this is a preview for you. Make a foray into the show as well.
Yeah.
Hector's plays a big role in it.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Some spicy scenes, man. You better, yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure.
Be like, oh, shit, when you get to
okay, him. I have no idea what that means, but I'm looking forward to it. Yeah. I like surprises.
Yeah. Going back to the Game of Thrones, it's interesting to see, I don't know if you and Jason talked about this in the previous one. Did you guys talk about the characters that were from Game of Thrones that made it into this
show?
Oh,
yeah, we did. We talked about Gwendolyn, I forget her full name, but she plays Lucifer.
Yeah, Gwendolyn Christie.
Who else?
Because she was Brienne, Tarth from.
Great choice for Lucifer, I think, because Lucifer in the comics is a dude, but I think casting her is great because she has a great presence. She's tall and. And
she's very assuming and she's kind of, and she gets nasty. I mean, you definitely can feel like the wrath.
I'm looking forward to getting to those episodes.
Mm-hmm. Do you think this is somewhat of like a dog? You know how Dogma God is a woman. Right?
Yeah. Ooh.
So do you think this is kind of like somewhat of a take, on that? So like we'll make the devil a woman in this one?
Yeah. I know that there's been gender swaps and ethnicity like stuff changes, like Death, for example, is in the comics is Caucasian, like the typical goth girl.
Mm-hmm.
But in the show, she's not. I haven't gotten to that episode where they introduced Death yet, but she's not that.
It's a really good episode.
Yeah.
There's so many.
I like all that with this. I brought up Jason, like there's certain fictional, and it's all fictional. So really at the end of the day, it's whatever they want to do. Like, but, I like it with this, the choices, gel work, I think. But with Lucifer or Death or Lucian also is a gender swap.
Constantine
as well. Yeah. I'm happy with all of it so far. I find it interesting in this case. Another instance where I'm kind of an instance where I wouldn't be okay with something like this would be like a James Bond, like making James Bond a woman or an American. I'm like, no, it's a dude and he's British. He can be Idris Elba, he can be black, Asian, white, Hispanic, as long as he's British, I'm cool with that. So but with this, and let's get back to at the beginning of our conversation where we're talking about not having read any of it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of glad I haven't read any of it.
I am too. It makes it more, it's one of those like double-edged swords where it's like, oh, well, I'm sure the graphic novel's excellent. I mean, he fits more into it, mm-hmm. more detail and more background. But, when it's the adaptation's great.
Yeah.
To be able to watch it with fresh eyes and not have it spoiled is some of the best viewing.
It's making it more enjoyable for me. But I've heard here and there that it is a pretty good adaptation of the book.
Mm-hmm.
Like you were saying, your friend mentioned how, and It's like with Lord of the Rings. Like, the movies, I hadn't read any of the books, and then halfway through the second, like, when The Two Towers had come out, that's when I had started to read the books, and then by the time Return of the King came out, I had already read all the books, and mm-hmm. so I had a taste of kind of both not knowing what I was getting into, and then also yeah. the going back to
And Peter Jackson did a great adaptation of Lord of the Rings. I mean, and he notoriously still got flack from people for
yeah, because it's not out.
I mean, fuck, it's already 3 hours.
They got a lot. They got a lot right with that
stuff in there. Yeah.
But so I'm wondering. This just thought just came into my mind just while we've been having this conversation is I'll probably end up going back and reading some Sandman comics mm-hmm. just from this TV show. I'm only 2 episodes in, but I'm really liking it. I like the aesthetic. It's a good looking show.
It is.
The Corinthian, fucking what a great, like, that's a great casting.
Yeah, there's so many of the castings are so great, and the characters are very well done.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's very captivating.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, everyone is their own unique character, and, you know, I don't think that there's too much emphasis on any one specific character.
Yeah.
Everyone has enough, like, to go around, enough yeah. screen time, and yeah. it's which is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. What I hope is captivating is this episode of Mind Grenade, episode 315. We are your hosts. I'm Hector.
This is Ian.
And Mind Grenade is a pop culture-based show that dives into TV, movies, music, comics, and a whole lot more. And, yeah, man, I think this won't be the last time we talk about this show. Because I'm watching it one episode at a time, and I'm really savoring it. And do you know if Matt's watched it? I have a feeling he might have already or no. Maybe not had the time to.
I don't think he's watched yet. I know he really wants to watch
yeah.
it. I mean, it's definitely in his wheelhouse yes. for sure. I'm sure if he hasn't, he should probably at least watch one.
Yeah, yeah. I know he just, him and his wife just went out of town to visit some friends yeah. and go to fish concerts. Stuff. Mm-hmm. So he might not have had the time, but I know it'd be something it'd pique his interest. And what I'm looking forward to is his thoughts on it, because I'm sure yeah. he'd have all kinds of thoughts for a show like this.
There's one kind of silly critique that I had.
Okay.
That by no means it's a bad thing. I just, for me, I could not, as soon as I saw his character. Tom Sturridge plays Dream,
yeah.
right?
Morpheus.
And,
yeah.
yeah. Morpheus, you know, it's a somewhat kind of, I mean, it's kind of an emo character, right?
Yeah.
He's like a long, gangly, pale white guy.
Yeah.
You know, and as soon as I saw him first time, I'm like, my God, it fucking looks like Chris Angel. You know, that horrible, like, magician. Yeah. And that's the only kind of, like...
Okay, little hang-up.
Yeah, hang-up is that he just... maybe a little bit too emo-ish, mm-hmm. you know?
Okay.
In some of his moments on screen.
Yeah, I was thinking about this, actually, right before we recorded about him. I think it's appropriate, from the little I know of Morpheus from the comics. And having not read it, this book is so beloved and it has such a it holds weight, and it always has since I've been reading comics. It's always been there. It's like the comic book for intellectuals, and even not having read it, I know enough about the characters, just enough. And I feel like this actor has that kind of like, distant kind of quality to him. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I feel like this actor is doing a decent job with this role because
I agree. He's character. I know what you mean. It's hard to put fingers on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's like present but distant at the same time.
Yeah. Which
makes sense. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's just you know, which makes sense for basically a god that
yeah.
has lived for millennia.
Yeah.
And you know has these interactions and gets bored yeah. with things and for. He'll look. He's done so much that he's forgotten things
yeah.
he's done.
But what you said earlier about the cast, I think that actually works for the show. That he's not complete, and he might overtake the show later on in the season when I get there. But I think that I think it's good that he doesn't overtake the show, even though it's his show. But I feel like it gives the other actors, the other characters, more room to kind of not shine, but like, I don't know, for us to be interested in the other characters.
Yeah, and I hope they keep it that way, and maybe more so in the later, you know, seasons 2 and 3, maybe he does end up taking more of a spotlight. But at least for this first season, he does not, and that stays true, I think, for the whole thing.
Okay.
And he, you know, shares a spotlight really with a whole bunch of characters, and even, you know, new ones you've never even seen before.
Yeah.
Even like halfway through, it's still popping up that he's, you know, sharing the kind of the limelight with.
Yeah.
And every character, I think one thing that's you can really appreciate about the show is that the depth that they give the characters, they make all of them, even the villains, you know, mm-hmm. kind of likable and intriguing at the same time. Like, they have their motives for what they're doing, and mm-hmm. they explain it, and you kind of understand like why it is that they're doing that.
The Corinthians one, and they might kill him off 3 episodes in or whatever. But like, as of right now, I find that character so compelling, scary as hell. But it's that it's the way he's carrying himself. Mm-hmm. He's got the glasses on all the time, and he takes them off. The second episode. I'll try not to spoil too much of it, but you think he's got the upper hand, and then he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. I like, back to what we were saying earlier, not having read the books. Like, I like not thinking one thing, and then my expectations get it doesn't go the way I think it's going to go. I like that.
And that definitely continues to happen. There's a few moments that you think they're going to, you know, have this big battle, and mm-hmm. then it kind of shifts, and it's something you didn't even expect. It's really cool what they did. And I try my best not to spoil it, because there's so many things that you just need to watch it and not have it spoiled for you.
Yeah. I wonder how I'm really... this type of show is why I'm glad we have a podcast. That we get to like just unpack it after we've watched it. So I think we'll keep talking about it. And I'm definitely not done talking about it right now. I'm just saying that in upcoming episodes, I'm sure I want to hear what Matt has to say. I want to hear more of Jason, if he has more to say about it, you as well. But like, I think once I get done watching the show, I think I'd like to have a spoiler full episode where we just, and we'll do the entire,
it'd be like, fun to have the spoilers and like, you know, little kind of nuggets of lore
that's
kind of packed in there, because I'm sure there's so much I've missed.
Yes, exactly.
Even, like, the artifacts from the first, you know, first one, episode 1 and 2 are very cool.
Yeah,
you know, his different items that he has.
I didn't know, see, that's where like I knew Morpheus and his sister and the other Endless. I know the characters, but I didn't know the little things like that, like the jewel that he has, mm-hmm. or the sand, or this and that. There's a scene in the first episode where he gets he confronts somebody over something that happened to him. He confronts him when he regains his power again. Confronts the person, and he's sitting in kind of a dark room, and you see just his silhouette mostly, and then the shine and like the little pins of light in his eyes,
mm-hmm.
and it really just like, you're like, oh, like, I don't know, man, it was perfect. It was like it filled me with dread just looking at him there, where before you kind of saw him in a vulnerable light.
Yeah.
But then when you see him where he has to take care of business, you're like, oh, fuck, this guy means business.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that, man. I really like the approach. I have no idea who the director is. I haven't gone that far into my research yet. But to see who's been putting this together, the showrunner or whatnot. I did mention this to Jason. I have a gut feeling this will go for more than just the one season.
I think it will as well. I mean, it already is really picking up traction now. I think just
word of mouth.
Because I think when it first launched, it was on the top 10 list, you know, for Netflix, whatever you know you make of that. I mean, I think it's, you know, build with more watches, but I think this week it was like now it's like number one.
Okay.
So I think it's really kind of creeping up there.
And because I was talking to you earlier about, he was on Mark Maron's podcast, and I urge anybody who's watching this show or interested in Neil Gaiman, it's Mark Maron's such a great interviewer, but also Neil Gaiman is such an open book. Like, he talks about, Mark Maron asked him, he's how long do you think this will take to adapt the entire Sandman story from book to TV series? And he says, however long it takes, like it could be 3 seasons, 4 seasons, or whatever. But he was saying how if this is the only season it gets, he's very, very happy with it. And you can just hear it in his voice that he genuinely feels that way. But just me, Hector, co-host of My Grenade Podcast, and I'll come back and apologize, and not apologize, but reference this prediction is, I think it'll get more than just one season. Yeah. Just a gut feeling.
I'm with you there. I mean, and I also love to, you know, with this getting more penetration, there's a lot of people that aren't familiar with his works. And, mm-hmm. He's done a lot of great things.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just, you know, Sandman. I mean, he's mm-hmm. American Gods. And was it Neverwhere is another one? I mean, he's had a ton of successes. I think it's awesome to kind of have more of his stuff brought into light.
You know, because last night we were looking up his bibliography and then also looking at stuff that has been adapted of Neil Gaiman's. I had forgotten he did a movie. There's a movie called Stardust that he wrote in 1999. It's a fantasy novel. Neil Gaiman. See, Stardust has a different tone and style from most of Gaiman's prose fiction, being consciously written in the tradition of pre-Tolkien English fantasy.
Hmm.
And was it who did the adaptation? The movie. It's who was it? It's the guy that Matthew Vaughn. Matthew Vaughn directed Stardust, and it's got some.
I never watched that.
Yeah, it's a fun fantasy movie. It's got big names in it too. The big names in the supporting roles, but the main roles are lesser known actors. But it's very. I think Claire Danes is in it. Robert De Niro has a small part in it. It's got a bunch of big known British actors. But anyway, I bring that one up, and Matthew Vaughn was the director of, like, it was between doing the movies Kick-Ass and Kick-Ass 2, and then he did Stardust after that, then he did X-Men First Class, and then since then Matthew Vaughn's been doing Kingsman. He's been doing Kingsman. So it's that same director.
He's had a pretty good run then.
Yeah. But between all those franchise movies, he did Stardust, which is a Neil Gaiman adaptation, which I didn't know was a Neil Gaiman book. But that's a fun fantasy
There's movie. Another one. Are you familiar? So he's done another. He had another book that was made into a movie, very Tim Burton-esque.
Coraline.
Yeah, exactly. Which that was, that was a very unique movie, and mm-hmm. I enjoyed it as well.
That's the best way to describe his Neil Gaiman's just storytelling. It's unique in the best way.
Yeah,
yeah, and a super complimentary because he's capable. He's a captivating writer. Mm-hmm. Like you're like, oh, this is kind of strange and weird, but then you get drawn in. And that interview he did on Mark Maron's WTF podcast, you get insight on the guy. He seems like a very sweet, thoughtful person.
I think you'd almost have to be like thoughtful, down to earth, like really can just kind of pick what makes people work apart.
Yeah.
To really tie your characters in and have such a deep, I don't know, character development and all the stuff.
Get a little bit more volume for you there, buddy. I think it's on my end here. So we'll do. Did you have anything else on?
No, Sandman? I don't think so. I mean, the only other thing I you guys probably already talked about, but the thing that shocked me was it took me way too embarrassing long to realize this, but that the first character there was a Robert Burgess.
Yeah.
Is Tywin Lannister.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That was Game okay. I'm glad.
I think it'd be way too fucking long.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad we went back to that because you did mention there was more Game of Thrones characters in there. We only mentioned the Gwendolyn. But
I was like halfway through the first episode and I was like, holy shit.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll switch some gears a little bit here. Recently, because this episode, I'd promised a double feature episode. I thought I was just going to be recording this on my own. But I was going to do a double feature 2000 movies episode with a movie called Vengeance that I watched in the theater. It's BJ Novak from The Office. It's the first thing he's ever directed. He stars in it. It's got Ashton Kutcher and a bunch of other actors in it.
BJ Novak. What? I'm trying to think. Who is he?
He's a kind of nebbishy, kind of quiet guy that, I'll let you look it up while I talk about it a little bit. BJ Novak. I love this movie. So I think I'm going to save that for when we're all here together, all four of us. It's an indie movie. It was in the theater for about 1 week. So really me bringing it up now, it's not like you can go watch it because it was in the theater 1 week. And it was the same weekend that Bullet Train came out, and I was planning on watching Bullet Train and Vengeance, and I'm glad I watched Vengeance first, because Bullet Train's been in the theater, it's still in the theater, and it's been, I think it's coming up on its third or fourth week, but Vengeance was out that same week, and I'm glad I went and watched it, because it was in the theater 1 week. And then the other thing, too, that you'll appreciate this, it was an indie movie, limited theatrical release, small theater. And there's probably like 10 people in the theater with me. Fucking polite as fuck. Nobody had their phone on. Nobody was talking throughout the entire thing. Everybody just watching the movie. I was like, God damn it.
Do you think that that's a function of, because it's an Indian movie, that people wanted to be there 100%. They were on board. They were like, oh shit, I'm going to go see this.
It wasn't, they weren't going there to kill 2 hours. Yeah. They were there to watch a movie, which I completely appreciate. And I'll get into that movie in particular, whenever the four of us are here. But Bullet Train, I'll talk about now, which is the other movie I was going to do for my double feature. But Bullet Train, I remember when I started at the beginning of the year, I'll look through to see which movies are coming out. And then I'll make my list of which ones I want to go see in the theater. And I was going through and I see something called Bullet Train with Brad Pitt attached. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And it's like not a franchise. It's not like an adaptation of something. It actually is an adaptation of a Japanese book. But I really enjoyed it. And it's whenever I do the 2000 movie solo episodes, at the end, I try to figure out which one of you, Matt or Jason, I would recommend it to. Mm-hmm. And Bullet Train is one I would recommend it to all three of you guys. It's a fun, light action comedy film from the director of, I think he did one of the Deadpool movies, and I think he co-directed the first John Wick movie. So it's just an ensemble.
So his director is David Leitch.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure he's connected to the John Wick franchise. I think he co-directed the first John Wick movie, and then I'm pretty sure he did the first or second Deadpool movie. I think he did this.
Yeah, yeah. So John Wick, Deadpool 2, okay. Fast and Furious, Atomic Blonde.
So in that same vein of movie, that's what this is.
Okay.
And it's got Zazie Beetz is in it for a little bit. Joey King, Brad Pitt, Brian Tyree Henry's in it. He's great. Hiroyuki Sanada is one of these Japanese actors that once you see him, you're like, oh, that guy. Bad Bunny's in it. My dad is hilarious. He goes, oh, Bad Bunny's in that movie. He's all, forget about Brad Pitt or any of the other people in there. The reason that movie's going to make money is because of Bad Bunny. I was like, Bad Bunny. He's like, oh, he's a reggaeton type of rapper guy that's like internationally known. And is starting to kind of get a name here in the United States. But my dad's argument is that the reason this movie is going to make any money is because internationally, Bad Bunny's in it. And people in other countries line up just to go to this guy's concerts and stuff. That. And actually, he was pretty good. It's, and the main reason my dad was getting behind all this because Bad Bunny's a Puerto Rican actor, rapper. And he was actually really good in it, too. Everybody was really good in this movie. The critiques I have, I gave it a C+, which for me is still a really good. I gave Thor: Love and Thunder a C+, and I gave The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent a C+. Those are movies that I will still recommend as a C+. The critiques I had on this were really minor. It was that this movie is set in Japan, but like, they had to have filmed it somewhere here and or in Toronto or something, because it feels as much like Japan as Taco Bell feels like Mexican food. So, but it takes place mostly on a bullet train. So what you're seeing outside zipping by can be anything, right? Like there's a couple scenes where they stop and you get to see what's supposed to be Japan, but yeah, it was based on a Japanese book. There's Japanese people in it, but it's an Americanized version of whatever that book was. And Brad's excellent in it. So is every, like
is
I said,
he
every,
is he play is he a main role in it?
He's kind he, of no, he's a main role in it. But with like Sandman, the ensemble really like if you get like a good ensemble, then
he's not overshadowing everyone else.
I think Aaron Taylor Johnson's in it and Brian Tyree Henry right, are in it.
So Ryan Reynolds has a name, he's unlisted, but yeah. did you catch him in there?
Yeah, you okay. you right. it's a good joke because actually in Deadpool 2, which is the same director, Brad Pitt shows up in Deadpool 2 as the Vanisher for like a second. So they must have like kind of traded a little cameo roles. Mm-hmm. It's like I said, action, comedy, and it moves along pretty briskly. I was talking to Adrian, who previous co-host of the podcast here. She loved it too. I enjoyed the shit out of it. I give it a C+ because I got to be fair. When I do these like grades, I got to like consider that somebody could argue with me over it. So I have to like be as objective as possible, even though I really liked it. I have to be like, well, there's some cheesiness here and there, but it's an action comedy. Like, it's, of course, not everything has to.
Now, since it's on a train, does it have like some speed? You know,
because Sandra Bullock's in this movie, and she's good too. Like, everybody was good in this.
They didn't air brakes, right?
Yeah, like
bullet train can't stop.
Man, like, I'm wondering if there was a Sandra Bullock reference in there, because why wouldn't you have right? some kind of Sandra Bullock reference in there. Yeah. I enjoyed this movie. When I was saying earlier that I make a list at the beginning of each year of which movies I want to like catch in the theater. This one, when I remember seeing, I was like, what the fuck is this with Brad Pitt? And then I saw the cast and I was like, Jesus Christ, like Sandra Bullock and all these other people are in it. I was like, what is it? How do I not know about this? And then we kept seeing trailers in the theater. Just about every movie I went to watch this year had a trailer for this movie in front of it. So I was a little worried that it'd be trash, but it's not. It's really enjoyable. You know, let me go down my list just for context for people who want to wrap their heads around my grading system here. So I'll go down my list of the movies I've watched in the theater this year, 2022. And this is my film grading system. So if I give something an A, it's one of my it's a movie that's become one of my favorites. A B is something I liked but wasn't enamored. A C it was okay. A D is meh, and an F is who held a gun to my head and made me watch this. And I don't think I've watched an F in a long time. So with that in mind, I gave The Batman a B. Everything Everywhere All at Once I gave a B. The Northmen I gave an A. The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, that's the Nicolas Cage movie, I gave that a C+. That's a C plus. That was still an enjoyable fucking time at the movie theater. Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, I gave a B minus. Jurassic World Domination, I gave a C minus. Thor Love and Thunder, which again I love, I really, really enjoyed, I gave it a C plus. Again, this is like, I have to consider that at some point somebody's going to debate me on this. Mm-hmm. So I have to be as objective as possible when I give the grades, even if I love the movie. Vengeance, I gave an A minus. So it's one of my favorite movies, but the minus is because it's not a perfect movie, and I'm sure I have to debate people on it. Bullet Train, a C plus.
You know, it's been a good year for movies. 2022's had a lot of good ones.
The highlights are like Everything are all Everything Everywhere All at Once. Let's see what else. The Northman is probably the best movie I've watched this year, I think.
Okay.
The Northman was like it. The Northman for me was I could tell what the intention was, and they captured it. Like, I can tell that the director and the actor were like, this is what we want to do, and then he fucking nailed it. And it was a high bar, and he nailed it. It's one of those movies where it's not for everybody, but like, if you just want to see something like it, you're like, and I talked about this movie on the podcast before, it's you're transported to however many hundreds of years ago, where the movie takes place in like Viking times, you're transported to that era somehow, even though we don't have very good documentation of how that was. Mm-hmm. This movie made you feel like you were actually there, and it's visceral and great performances and very poetic scenes that mm-hmm. just feel like that were captured. Very like, you're like, how did they do that?
That one is at my pinnacle of like must watch next. Yeah. As soon as that's like,
yeah, yeah.
Hits my streaming services.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you'd enjoy it. It's like I said, it's not for everybody because it'll get violent. It's violent like Braveheart, but
it's not like 4 hours long like Braveheart.
It's not 4 hours long like Braveheart. It probably doesn't have as much violence as Braveheart. I'm just saying like the type of violence. And that's really not why, that's not the draw for the movie, the violence. I'm just like,
It's a brutal time. I mean
exactly. That, yeah. There's some
like captured it well.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. The movies I have left on my list for this year are Spider-Man, Across the Spider-Verse sequel that I'm wondering if it's going to come out this year or not, because it says it's due October 7th, but I've yet to see any trailer. Like,
I can't imagine it.
Yeah. They'd be promoting the shit out of it right now. Right,
yeah, yeah. And there's no way. They've been promoting the hell out of like every Spider-Man movie for like 6 months beforehand.
Yeah, yeah. So that one's on my list tentatively if it comes out this year. Black Panther, Wakanda Forever in November, and then Avatar 2 in December, which... It's funny whenever we talk about Avatar on the podcast, especially with Matt's here. It's like, yes, I get it. It's fluff. It's fucking shallow, and it's not. And it's James Cameron.
I mean, it did look great. The first one was really amazing. To me, it's known everything going to see Jurassic Park. Right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You're looking, you know.
Yeah.
Going in, I'm not hoping for the best story ever.
Yeah.
It looks captivating. It looks awesome. I'm
now,
okay with that.
Now, if it looks awesome, but it's annoying, the story, then I don't want anything to do with it.
It's just like old Jar Jar Binks.
Yes, or some of the Transformers movies. The first Avatar movie was a basic enough story, and it wasn't annoying, except for, what was the name of that metal they called it? Unobtainium?
Yeah, that...
Like, that's
and that that deservedly and rightfully so got a lot of flack
from
everyone from school-aged children to the nursing home.
Yeah, but it looked amazing, and I enjoyed watching that in the theater for what it was. But so my standard still holds for this Avatar movie. I'll go watch it. Hopefully it's not dumb as shit. Those are the three movies left on my list to watch this year. But yeah, so that was my review for... Bullet Train. I still.
I think it's on my radar to watch now. I mean, yeah. I did not know about it'd it, be, nor probably would have watched it if I without
a
recommendation.
It'd be a. So a C plus. Having watched it in the theater, I feel like as a stream, like I bet you it'll get a lot of streaming.
I can see that. I mean, action comedies. It's like definitely great to just lay on the couch and watch.
Exactly. I predict that it'll get a lot of love once it's streaming or on iTunes and stuff when it comes out. It's definitely a people pleaser, the movie. That's the best way for me to describe the movie. It's a people pleaser.
Well, and while you don't have that many movies left you want to go see in theater, then thank God there's a ton of great new shows coming out.
It's overwhelming, actually.
Yes, it's so many.
Yeah, we got the Game of Thrones show, the prequel series comes out this weekend, I think.
It's real soon.
Yeah. And then the Lord of the Rings on Amazon is going to be premiering soon. We got She-Hulk. We got another Star Wars show, Star Wars Andor, I think comes out. That's the Rogue One kind of prequel. That comes out in September. Rick and Morty just announced that they're going to be out in a couple weeks. I'm leaving stuff out.
Which, and that's always comes on HBO Max as well.
Oh, good.
Because that, like, I don't know if it's right away, but I think Adult Swim, I think they... I don't know if they're licensed or they're owned because all of the Rick and Morty, it's on on HBO Max.
Yeah, and I think I did piggybacked onto my parents' Hulu account, so I know Hulu will have Rick and Morty on there as well. But yes, we were talking about this last night. It's a good problem to have.
Yeah,
because I mean, some of this, like, I'm hoping it's all good, but numbers wise, like, some of it has to be I'm hoping, like, the Game of Thrones show is amazing.
We were kind of also speculating that Wheel of Time, which I'm extremely excited for, will probably get pushed back to maybe 2023 just because there's so much content.
Yeah,
it just seems crazy for them to want to release another fantasy show, like a big spender, big time fantasy show. I believe that's Amazon Prime as well, so they would have Lord of the Rings and Wheel of Time, like, going about at the same time. I can't imagine they would want to do that.
Yeah. There's two seasons of that, right?
There's only been one out so far. So okay. This is going to be the second one.
Okay. I think I'm also watching, or I need to start watching What We Do in the Shadows. And but that one I can probably put on hold for a while until I make room for it. Because I've already watched like three seasons of that or something like that, three or four seasons. And it's really probably the funniest thing on TV. But I'll probably choose some of the stuff I haven't gotten into. Like I haven't watched, you know, the Lord of the Rings show, for example. This is the first time they've had a Lord of the Rings TV show. That'll be interesting to see what our thoughts are, but also to see how the internet reacts to that show. Because I'm sure it'll get...
The love and hate for Lord of the Rings is so strong.
It'll be interesting to see how it manifests itself online.
Because I don't consider the Lord of the Rings fan base nearly as degenerates as like Harry Potter or Star Wars fans. Or, you know, I honestly think that Star Trek is more civilized. As a fan base.
Yeah.
They kind of get a little bit of a bad rap for being like ultra nerds, but I feel like that ship has sailed and now they've like refined themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really the turbo nerds are now coming from Harry Potter
and and Star Wars. Yeah. Like they take the fun out of it when you go online and like, what was that the last episode of Obi-Wan? Like, I was on cloud nine having watched it, and I was like, I want to see what people think online. And then I was like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh, they're like, I already knew it was going to happen. Like, of course you freaking did. It's literally like a in-between episode. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think
some of me just can't win. So, yeah, I'm curious to see as well what the community thinks.
For The Lord of the Rings, I'm wondering how many episodes and how long. I'm assuming it'll probably be similar to Lord of the Rings. Will probably be similar to Game of Thrones.
I assume so. Hour-long episodes. Maybe the first episode's like an hour and a half or something like that. Or no, they're going to drop two at the same time, I think they said. So yeah, probably like an hour and an hour or so. That way you kind of get a good... Which I appreciate that. You know, when you when you're excited about a new show and it first drops, yeah. just that taste, the first mm-hmm. episode is kind of like leaves you wanting.
Yeah.
They do two, then it's like, okay, you got your fill and now you can wait, you know, for the next week.
They know what they're doing.
Oh yeah. They probably like had panels of people and interviewed them and they're like, yeah. what did you like better, all at once?
Or, yeah. Yeah.
Which we talked about this last night, but I'm happy they're not just dumping all of it. It was nice to binge like one show, mm-hmm. but I burn out so fast. If I like after watching Sandman, I probably won't watch anything until, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm taking a little break until,
yeah.
you know, we got these episodes, but I'm just glad mm-hmm. they're not going to drop all of Lord of Wings at once or,
yeah,
you know, all of Game of Thrones. Like, it's just too much.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I was negotiating with myself over all this content that's coming out. I was like, oh no, I want to keep up. Cause I know Jason and Matt and Ian are going to be watching a bunch of these shows too. And I like when we can give out a spoiler alert and then just fucking just go into it and really break shit down when we're here together. I can't watch all this shit.
So it gets to be too much. Yeah.
It's just, I thought about it. I was like, oh, maybe I can watch three or four or five different shows. And like,
And then it ends up being like a second job.
Yeah. I want to enjoy this. I don't want
to install a time punch next to your TV.
Yeah. So, I think I'll just keep to my three shows at once. And if we're recording and then you guys go fucking bananas over a show I'm not watching, then I'll just put one on hold and then pick up where you. So it's happened before. I was talking to Jason about this. I don't think it made it on air, but like that example of him getting a text message from you and it hitting him just right. And then he was like, fuck yeah. And then, and it worked out for him. He loved the show.
Yeah, and then his love for it made me like want to double down and like keep watching. Like, I got to watch like one at that point. I'm like, yeah, it's really good. Then he's like, oh man, you just wait. And I'm like, yeah, well, fuck, I can watch some more right now.
Yeah, and it's happened before where like, you know, two of you guys have like really like Barry is one of the shows where
I've started watching then, and it's really fun. Yeah.
So I like when that happens where it's like, I appreciate and respect all your guys' tastes, but I've already got three shows or however, I'm already in my queue at the top of my queue, but depending on how you guys describe something, then it could push something up to the top of my queue. Mm-hmm. And I think that's great. I think Matt's wife had mentioned Everything Everywhere All at Once and that she'd watch it and she loved it. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember telling me and Matt were talking. And she mentioned how she likes that about the podcast. Like, I don't think she listens to the podcast, but she'll hear Matt talking about, oh, I got this recommended to mm-hmm. me from the guys on the podcast. So she likes that all of us will be recommending stuff to each other and stuff hits and stuff doesn't, but when it hits, it's really good. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, we'll wrap it up here unless you had anything else.
No, I think that pretty much covers it.
Yeah. Let's see here. So, I wanted to do a podcast recommendation for, Quentin Tarantino, Roger Avery have a podcast called Video Archive. And, it's pretty film nerdy. After watching Bullet Train, I ended up watching Once Upon a Time in Hollywood again. And I don't know why, but I keep forgetting how great that fucking movie is and how fucking cool Brad Pitt is in that movie. It's incredible. He ended up winning an Oscar for that role in that movie. And I'm already a huge Quentin Tarantino fan, but that movie in particular, like, he keeps teasing with, like, he's going to be done after 10 films, and that was his ninth film. Mm-hmm. But if his last film is complete shit, I'm okay with it, because, like, Pulp Fiction is probably going to be the movie that, I mean, it put him on the map, and deservedly so. That movie's amazing. Kill Bill 1 and 2, to me, are my personal favorites. I consider those movies a masterpiece. Care what anybody else says, I think those movies are fucking fantastic. But this Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is like, it's a masterpiece if you're only comparing, like, if you're comparing it to all his other movies, like, it's a near perfect Tarantino movie. Like, it has everything that he's good at, done at, I mean, it's his ninth film.
But in a unique, different way. Mm-hmm. It was way different than a lot of his other films mm-hmm. he's done, and I did appreciate that for sure mm-hmm. with Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I mean, I'm trying to think, is there any, his other ones, what do you think the closest one to that from his other movies he's done?
This one reminded me the most of Pulp Fiction, even though they're not really the same, but the something about it reminded me. I was like, oh, this feels like, because he did Hateful Eight, and he did Django Unchained, and but this one felt like he captured whatever he captured with Pulp Fiction. Those other movies are amazing, but he captured whatever he did with in Pulp Fiction. But Inglourious Basterds is amazing too. But I don't know. It was one of those movies, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, where like, I enjoyed it the first time I watched it, and then for some reason, I feel like I didn't give it enough credit, because when I watched it the second time, I watched it with my mom the second time, and I found another appreciation for it. And then after watching Bullet Train and then wanting to go and listening to Quentin Tarantino's podcast, I was like, I'm going to watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood again. And I watched it piecemeal. I watched like in three sittings, and it's all around amazing. It's such a deep movie mm-hmm. where maybe I'm getting kind of like, I'm being dazzled by the surface stuff, but the more I watch it, I'm catching stuff that's deeper. Mm. He seems to make movies the way a writer writes a book, like a novel, where there's layers and layers. So you read a book two or three times and you're finding shit that you didn't find before. So I appreciate that. But yeah, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood's an amazing, amazing film. So like I said, I don't think it's as, like I said, Kill Bill to me is like fucking just a masterpiece. So I'm not saying Once Upon a Time in Hollywood's my favorite of his movies, but I'm finding more to it than just what I got in the first couple of sittings of watching it. So, Quentin Tarantino and Roger Avery. Roger Avery was his like co-partner, some kind of partner on Pulp Fiction with Tarantino. And Roger Avery's also a director. I can't think of what other movies he's directed, but it's really Tarantino's podcast, and Roger Avery's kind of his co-host. And they just talk about movies. Mm-hmm. Like they pick two or three obscure movies that you might have heard of but not really, and then you just fucking get into it, and I find that shit interesting. So if you're
I'm just watching the pros kind of work and yeah. talk shop basically, yeah. which is always a privilege to be a fly on the wall.
Yes, and, that's know, exactly.
People that really know their shit are yeah. talking about their craft.
Yeah, and few people know their shit like that mm-hmm. as much as Tarantino does. So that's called the Video Archive, and you can find that anywhere podcasts are found. I'll tease a couple of the upcoming episodes. So I guess we'll be talking more about The Sandman here on the podcast, but also we're going to be talking about Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones and probably She-Hulk and everything else. So you have that to look forward to. And you can go to – ooh, and I was saving this story for this podcast, but I'll save it for the next one. I sold some more artwork.
Oh, fantastic.
So I'll let everybody know the backstory to that on the next episode of the podcast here. And you can find my artwork. I got an art gallery on mindgrenadestudios.com, and you can find a feed of the podcast there. You can subscribe on iTunes or anywhere podcasts are found. All right, so thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. This has been Hector for Ian and Morpheus saying so long, and we'll talk to you soon.
Nailed it.